From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. We're a couple of weeks away from the 50th anniversary of another of 1968's tragedies, the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy in early June as he campaigned for president. We'll talk to his eldest daughter, Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, former Lieutenant Governor of Maryland, about what kind of father he was, what issues he was campaigning on, and why she thinks he was able to reach across class and race boundaries in a way many Democrats today find a challenge.
He could walk in Appalachia, he could walk in the inner cities, he could walk on the Indian reservation, and yet climb Mount Kennedy with Jim Whittaker. So he could touch so many people from so many walks of life.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another, feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black.
The voice of Robert F. Kennedy. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. The night that Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, Robert F. Kennedy, who had been formally campaigning for only a few weeks for the Democratic nomination for president, was scheduled to speak in Indianapolis, my hometown, in the heart of the black community. Some cities already had erupted in violence. Kennedy's aides and even his pregnant wife, Ethel, thought it was too dangerous for him to show up there, but he insisted. Many in the crowd had not yet learned that King had died. Kennedy gently broke the awful news and spoke for the first time in public of his own brother's assassination 5 years before.
For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times.
Just 8 weeks later, Kennedy himself was assassinated in Los Angeles 50 years ago next month. Kennedy's oldest daughter, Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, former Lieutenant Governor of Maryland, now an adjunct professor in Georgetown University's School of Public Policy, invited me to her home to reflect on her father's legacy. Hello, Kathleen.
Good to see you, Sheila.
Only 6 minutes, but such a powerful speech. I can say powerful, not just because it moves us today, but because there's empirical evidence. Indianapolis did not join in the riots that scarred 100 other cities like Baltimore. What explains his connection to people so different from him?
I think my father had a great sense of empathy and had suffered greatly himself because of my uncle's death and was able to, when he was Attorney General, understand the extraordinary challenge and difficulty it was to be black or African American in our country. And because he understood it and felt it, he could relate to others in the audience, and they could see his pain, they could see his love, they could see his compassion, and they could, I think, understand that this was a man who was going to fight for them, be with them, stand with them, hope with them, in a way that most politicians and most people, most whites, had never done.
But he was a wealthy white guy, and yet black people listened, poor white people listened. Democrats today are wondering how to build the kind of coalition he was building. What did he bring to the table that people today aren't so good at?
I would say there are two things. One, physical and moral courage, and a belief in America. Maybe those are three things. And so that meant that he loved people. He understood where they came from. He was not judgmental. Unlike, you would say, some Democrats would say, criticize people they disagree with. They're stupid, or they're dumb, or they're idiots. He would never use those kind of words. He would try to understand where people came from and why they felt as they did. That's number one. And number two, because he believed deeply that each of us have a responsibility to make a difference, he would quote Goethe, "You only win your freedom by daily conquering it anew, by working each day." He had high expectations so that he could say, for instance, to white medical students who were asked, when my father said, you know, everybody should have health care, and then they asked, who should pay for it? And he said, you should. Because he believed, he said, you're lucky, you're fortunate, you're privileged, you have a responsibility. Or when the college students would have college deferments for not going into Vietnam, he would say, those college deferments are unfair. Why should other people who don't have the money that you have and who are working at a filling station, why shouldn't they get the same opportunities that you do? It's not fair that they're being sent 12,000 miles across the ocean to fight and to be killed, and you get to sit here and not put yourself on the line. So he was very able to speak about what this country could be and what people's responsibility was. And so when you looked at him, you didn't think you were getting BS. You felt you were getting the real deal. And I think that appealed to a lot of people.
You were just a teenager.
Yes.
When you lost him. What was he like as a father?
We were very lucky to have my father as a father. He had a great sense of adventure. We could go hiking or canoeing or rafting down the river or skiing. And he had high expectations for what we should do. I mean, he really believed that each of us were very fortunate and that each of us had a responsibility to get involved and to serve. I can tell you a story about that if you wish. When he came back from the Delta, you know, he had gone and done hearings in the Delta.
The Mississippi Delta.
He had done hearings in the Mississippi Delta. And he came back once, it was a Sunday night, it was a beautiful Sunday night in June, and we were sitting in our living room, our dining room, we were sitting in our dining room. I was alone in the dining room, actually. And I remember he came in and he looked ashen. And he said, Kathleen, I've just been to Mississippi. And I saw a family living in a shack the size of our dining room. You know, do you know how lucky you are? These kids had distended stomachs because they didn't have enough food. They had sores all over them because they didn't have health care. Do you know how lucky you are? Do you know you have a special responsibility for this country? You have to do something. So he always had high expectations as a father about what our responsibility was.
It sounds as if he was almost learning that himself as he campaigned.
Well, it was not just as he campaigned and also as he had lived. He was always open to listening to new people, to seeing other people's challenges. You know, in the first month of his campaign, 10 of the 70 events that he had scheduled were on Indian reservations. And when his staff said, you're not going to get votes there. Why are you going there? And he said, because I like the Native Americans, and you're sons of bitches, and you shouldn't be on my campaign if you don't understand how important that is.
And where did that come from?
That came from a sense of, he recognized there was injustice. He'd always had a very strong sense of justice, as you know. And he believed that there should be justice for everybody, not just for the privileged.
That's former Maryland Lieutenant Governor Kathleen Kennedy Townsend here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're reflecting on the legacy of her father, Robert F. Kennedy, 50 years after he was shot on June 5th, 1968. She's now an adjunct professor in the School of Public Policy at Georgetown University and serves on the board of the Maryland Small Business Retirement Savings Program. Public policy covers a broad range. What is your focus?
I'm primarily focused on making sure that everybody can have a good retirement. You know, 40% of Americans have nothing saved for retirement. And 80% of Americans fear retirement more than they fear death because they have so little saved. I think that's wrong. It means that there's a sandwich generation who are worried about, should I take care of my parents or should I take care of my children? That's not American. I think everybody should be able to have a secure and safe retirement.
So what are you doing about it?
I'm pushing for legislation that would make sure that everybody could save, as they do in many countries around the world, and that, so that when they retire, they can have a monthly paycheck for the rest of their life.
And you are head of retirement security for the Economic Policy Institute?
I am. And what we're doing is educating people about that there are solutions to the retirement crisis. So many people feel embarrassed and ashamed that they haven't saved, and they think it's their fault, when it isn't their fault. A system hasn't been set up so that it makes it easy to save. It's fine if you work for a large business, but if you work for a small business, it's just too difficult.
I want to get back to your father. Until he was elected to the U.S. Senate from New York in 1964, he was really in his brother's shadow. I mean, he was a Senate staffer, but he was JFK's campaign manager and then his attorney general, kind of famously. President Kennedy, when he appointed him, said, I can't see it's wrong to give him a little legal experience before he goes out to practice law, which kind of deflected the criticism of...
There was a lot of criticism of President Kennedy appointing his brother. But, you know, what's interesting about it, the Justice Department is now named after my father. Why? Because it was a great appointment, and my father did a lot on a number of areas. He's most famously now known for what he did for civil rights. But he was also the first person who said that there was such a thing as organized crime in the country. When J. Edgar Hoover didn't want to admit there was a mob, my father said there was and got the organized crime laws passed. People might not remember that today, but that's the case.
How is Robert Kennedy different from President Kennedy?
Well, one of the big differences, President Kennedy got to be president, and he was a very good president. I think that my father, because he had spent, you know, they both had different experiences. My father had worked very hard on the Senate Racket Committee's hearings prosecuting the mob. And he had, a keener sense of justice, and so really was a fighter for justice in a way that President Kennedy, who had been a hero in World War II and was a great reader, sort of had more of a sense of the whole world and not that you had to fight for every wrong. If you can see the difference, one person had maybe more, could stand back and judge what was going on. And I think that President Kennedy had that grace to do that. People who would talk about John Kennedy would say he would come into a room and there was just a sense of grace and charisma. When my father went into the room, he didn't have that same sense. He was probably shyer and would talk to one person rather than walk around the room talking to everybody.
I know you were just a kid, but did you think he would himself become a politician?
You know, when I was growing up, he was a big deal in my life, in fact, more than President Kennedy, because there was this huge fight between, as you know, my father and Jimmy Hoffa. And I remember there were television hearings about that. There was
Jimmy Hoffa of the Teamsters.
So there were television hearings about that. There were articles showing that my father was fighting this guy. I mean, he was called ruthless. So he was pretty large in my childhood. He seemed like a big deal. There was a lot of talk about my father when I was growing up. I mean, so he didn't seem second fiddle to me. He seemed very important to me. I mean, I can tell from, you know, if you're looking back from your perspective, he was helping my uncle. But from my perspective, he seemed like a really big deal.
I have no doubt. And I wasn't, when I asked if you thought he'd be a politician, I wasn't thinking of that politician as second fiddle. I just meant being in the public arena, shaking hands, communicating in that very personal way with the public. Did you see that coming?
It seemed like that's what he was always doing, because he ran my uncle's campaign in 1960. He was, during the West Virginia primary, he was never at home. So the truth is, Sheila, I can understand what you're coming at, but from my 10-year-old perspective. He seemed just as engaged, as involved as everybody else, as did all my family. I mean, my mother was out campaigning. My aunts were out campaigning. I was out campaigning. So we were all campaigning. It wasn't like one person was campaigning. The whole family was out shaking hands, working for John Kennedy. So it seemed like a natural thing to do.
As you said, he never became president, but arguably his influence on politics over these five decades has been of the same magnitude as his brother, as Lyndon Johnson, as Richard Nixon. What do you think his image has been in American politics over these decades?
Thank you, Sheila. Obviously, the fact that you're here is really touching, because it says that 50 years after my father died, and he was never president, people still remember him. And I think what they remember him is as a person who really did fight for justice and had enormous empathy for those who suffer in our country. And that combination of both a sense that every person has a dignity and that everybody deserves a chance and to be respected, because he could understand where they came from and he wasn't so judgmental about where people were. So that, you know, he could walk in Appalachia, he could walk in the inner cities, he could walk on the Indian reservation and yet climb Mount Kennedy with Jim Whittaker. So he could touch so many people from so many walks of life.
We need to take a quick break here. When we're back, I'll ask Robert F. Kennedy's oldest daughter about what progress has been made or lost on issues her father fought for. I'm Sheila Cass. This is On the Record. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass, sitting with Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, reflecting on the legacy of her father, Robert F. Kennedy, 50 years after he was shot and killed. The day after Martin Luther King Jr. was shot, the day after that remarkable speech in Indianapolis, your father was still in the Midwest. He spoke in Cleveland about, as he said, quote, the mindless menace of violence in America, which again stains our land and every one of our lives, end quote. He talked about guns and ammunition being available to, as he said, men of all shades of sanity, about casual violence as entertainment, and about war.
Violence breeds violence. Repression breeds retaliation. And only a cleansing of our whole society can remove this sickness from our souls. For there is another kind of violence, slower, but just as deadly destructive as the shot or the bomb in the night. This is the violence of institutions, indifference, inaction, and decay. This is the violence that afflicts the poor, that poisons relations between men because their skin has different colors. This is the slow destruction of a child by hunger and schools without books and homes without heat in the winter. This is the breaking of a man's spirit by denying him the chance to stand as a father and as a man amongst other men. But we can perhaps remember, if only for a time, that those who live with us are our brothers, and surely we can begin to work a little harder to bind up the wounds among us and to become in our hearts brothers and countrymen once again.
Were those ideas Robert Kennedy could have expressed 5 or 10 years earlier, do you think? Or was he going through a transformation?
Well, he was always willing to grow and change and get better. He certainly was that way. But I have to remind you that when he was a UVA law student, he had Ralph Bunche come and speak at the University of Virginia. And when Ralph Bunche couldn't have a place to stay because he was black, he stayed at my parents' house that night. And all night long, their house was pelted with, you know, tomatoes and apples and rocks, people screaming at them because they had a black person staying with them. So he was well aware, even at a young age, of the challenge of discrimination in the country. But he, I think, over the years, became much more empathetic, and it was not just intellectual, but out of his heart, to understand the challenges of poverty that we face.
And in that vein, I want to raise another 50th anniversary this year, the Kerner Commission, which was appointed to look at the causes of the 1967 riots in several cities, and issued a damning report blaming institutional and systemic racism, such as segregated housing, subpar schools, aggressive policing. The Kerner Commission warned that America was, quote, moving toward two societies, one black, one white, separate and unequal, close quote. So early this year, former Oklahoma Senator Fred Harris, the last surviving member of the Kerner Commission, collaborated on a report that said, in many ways, things are worse today. More segregation, more inequality, much more incarceration. It's not fair to ask you to channel your father, but I just wonder what you think your father would say about this state of affairs.
Yeah, my mother has been very clear. You're not allowed to channel your father because all you would do is just say what you yourself believe. I think my father, first of all, believed very much in the rule of law. So he would be upset about it, people wrecking the Justice Department in any way, shape, or form. And he believed very much that in businesses having a responsibility to also get involved and solve some of the problems of the country. It wasn't just politicians. And he did himself, in that Cleveland speech, as you know, talk about the role of institutions in provoking violence. He said, it's part of our fault. So he would say, what can we do to make things better? I'll give you an example. Right now, many students are in debt from college loans. That doesn't have to be the case. If you go to Europe, college is free for everybody. We could do that in this country. We could change how we educate people, and we don't. We could change the minimum wage laws to make them fair. We could make our labor unions stronger. We could do lots of things in our country to make things better for many people. It is a political choice that we don't do that, and he would be able to say that. He understood how power works, and he understood that you had to change the power structure to make things fairer.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, eldest daughter of Robert F. Kennedy, as we approach the 50-year mark since he was assassinated. Your father exists in the world today. His ideas are alive. What is it about his message, in your view, that has resonated over all these decades?
I think people like the fact that he was able to feel people's pain, and that he had the guts to speak about what was going on in the country, and that he also wanted to have solutions. For instance, I remember in 1968 going with him into the inner city in Washington, D.C., and he would say, and because he was building a pool there. And many politicians, when they say, oh, yes, you're right, we need a pool, wait to get legislation passed or wait to have something happen. He realized that needed to be done. He raised the money for the pool. He did it. He didn't wait for somebody else to solve the problem. He solved the problem. And then as we drove down into Washington, D.C., he said, you know, Kathleen, see all these, there are lots of kids who are living in those houses, and they're just like you. They have the same dreams you have. They say the same needs you have. They want to be able to do the same things you have. They're just not as lucky as you are, but they're just the same as you. You have to remember that. So he was always understanding that we're all here on Earth for a short period of time, that we share so much, and it is really our responsibility to make things better.
Do you think that sense of responsibility has caught on?
Well, I'm very optimistic about what the Parkland students have done. I think they've been terrific. I think that he's believed in the young. He believed that they have the least ties to the past and the greatest stake in the future, and that when they get involved and they get engaged and they say, we need to do something different, that they had the force and the power and the will to do it, and they could. As you know, they don't have the same challenges that middle-aged people have, taking care of their children, taking, you know, having a job. So they have that energy to actually say, life has to change.
Thank you for talking to us. Thanks.
Thank you, Sheila. It's good to see you.
Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, former Lieutenant Governor of Maryland, is adjunct professor in Georgetown University School of Public Policy and Director of Retirement Security at the Economic Policy Institute. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you've been with us. Come back tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.